him on the TV and the press. Why so many busy businessmen are snapping from the stress, and the rest of us are jogging from depression. Now, has it ever once occurred to you or ever crossed your mind that the problems of this nation are created by design? That no matter what they tell you, there's another bottom line intertwined between the patterns of deception. Since our eyes were first opened and our ears began to hear, they've been herding us like cattle through our fantasies and fears. They move us through illusion and confusion of the mind, and by changing subtle meanings to the words between the lines. It's the news behind the news and the methods you can use. It's a blueprint and the plan they all rely on, and it's written in the protocols, the learned elders of Zion. They'll tell you it's a forgery, they'll tell you it's a fake, that some anti-Semite wrote it for the money that he'd make. It's been slanderized and demonized and labeled racist hate by the same who stake a claim to its creation. Now I'm not here to try to argue if it's false or if it's true, if the author was a commie or the likes of you know who. What I'm really trying to tell you and to get across to you is it's a blueprint to the downfall of our nation. There's a cause to the chaos that's occurring in the land. There's a road to communism, there's a global master plan. You'll never read about it in a book of history, cause it's been hidden from the masses to control their destiny. It's the news behind the news and the methods that they use. It's the blueprint and the plan they all rely on, and it's written in the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. So if you ever get a chance to get a copy of your own, just remember not to ever leave it lying around your home, cause you never know just where their snoopy news reporters roam. That might even be a friend or close relation. It's the cause to the chaos that's occurring in the land. It's the source of communism, it's the global master plan. You'll never read about it in a book of history, cause it's been hidden from the masses to control our destiny. Methods that they use, it's a blueprint and the plan they all rely on, and it's written in the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, and it's written in the protocols of the learned elders of Zion.
Well, folks, we thank you for listening to the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. In the next hour, we've got an exciting program. We hope you enjoy it. I'll bring my co-host on, Will. Will, good evening. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing fantastic. And we've got an exciting program. We've been trying to put this program together for a while, and we've got a special guest, and we'll bring our special guest on. Pat Shannon, are you there, Pat?
I am. How are you?
I'm doing well, and we really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to come and join us here on the program today. We're looking forward to it. It's been something that we've been looking forward to and been trying to get put together, so just happy to have you on the program today.
All right. Happy to be here.
Well, I wanted to start off, and basically, I Pat, just a couple things, and wanted basically you to just tell our audience who Pat Shannon is. Just talking about your bio a little bit like that. You've been an investigative journalist, an author, had radio shows, just done a lot of different stuff. Covered a lot of really interesting topics over the years, from the JFK assassination, 1968 murders of Martin Luther King, Robert F. Kennedy, a lot of different things. Why don't you just start by telling us a little bit about who Pat Shannon is?
Well, what you just mentioned has been my life, the last half of my life, the last 40 years. I was a folk singer back in the 60s. I was a great fan of the Kingston Trio when they hit, and a friend showed me a few licks on chords on a guitar, and I began to work on it. And at that time, 6 months later, he and I auditioned, and we formed the trio and down in Biloxi at Trader John's, and we were the Village Singers, and I was lead singer for the Village Singers for 5 years. So that was unlike any kind of investigative stuff goes, but it sure was a great fun life for a 20-odd year old, you know?
It sounds like it.
Well, I ended up going around the world on my guitar. Went to Europe, bummed around. A friend went with me, and we bummed around, hitchhiked around Europe, and I sang in the streets, and he passed the hat, and we paid most of our expenses that way. That was back in 63. And that was kind of a fun thing, but I had to get more serious about life when I got married in 1965, and my dad was an insurance man in a small town in Mississippi where I grew up, and so he taught me the life insurance business, and I ended up doing that with him for a while, and I decided that life insurance sales was about the height of mediocrity. I couldn't have been more bored in small town Mississippi, and wife and I then took my guitar, but we sold the house and sold the car and got on a freighter and sailed to Australia. And we lived in Australia for the last years of the 60s once again traveled a lot around the world and got, quite an education. But you ask who I am, I'm trying to tell you about some of the early years. And we later, when we came back to Mississippi, we ended up buying a house down in Biloxi and moving in next door to some Amway direct distributors. And doggone if they didn't sponsor us into Amway, and it couldn't have been a greater opportunity. Most people back in those days thought, Amway was some kind of Avon door-to-door deal. They didn't understand the mass marketing part. And actually, in 5 years, we turned that marketing opportunity into a six-figure income by the end of the 1970s, and that was kind of our financial savior, and that allowed us to travel more and also do things later, as I became entranced with all the lies that the federal government was feeding Americans. It enabled me to be able to afford to go into investigative reporting, which, of course, doesn't pay very much in the beginning, until you have a magazine or a newspaper or someone to pay your way around. And fortunately, that did involve with American Free Press and the Media Bypass magazine. And that was my starter in the investigative business, once again, more than 40 years ago.
Wow.
I hooked up with a fellow colleague by the name of Tupper Saucy, who was quite renowned in the field, and Tupper and I became close friends and worked well together, and he was kind of my mentor, and I began to learn my way around the investigative field, and the biggest thing that came along that I probably covered more than any other writer in America was the Gordon Call case in 1983, when his son and friend, Scott Fall, were both arrested for murder when they had never fired a shot. And you, of course, and most of your listeners, I'm sure, know the basics of the story of Gordon Call being set up by the Fed and federal marshals and they tried to murder him. And I got on the scene in North Dakota and learned about some of the things that had gone on with that. And as I said, I ended up over the next several years writing probably more words about the government setup and murder of Gordon Call than anyone had. And that just kind of became my stepping stone, my leap into the field, and got hired by a magazine called Media Bypass that I'm sure you remember back.
Yes, sir.
'70s, and I got interviewed a few times and spread my name around. I was interviewed by a guy named Pete Peters. You probably remember him, huh?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, Pete and I became friends, too. I enjoyed knowing Pastor Pete, and of course, was sorry to hear about his early demise in life, and because he certainly was a good man, and he was a good friend to me. So that's kind of what launched me into investigative reporting, and Spotlight magazine used me back in the first in the 80s and 90s, and it evolved into American Free Press in early 2000s, and I spent the next many years with them, so just in investigating the fraud that the United States government, and currently it's happening again. I wrote an article for the Barnes Review just, I guess it's been last year now, eight months ago, and about how the FBI has, and what they're doing today is nothing new. They've been misbehaving for a long, long time, and it's coming out now how they are the two guys who were most dedicated in since Trump took over and appointed the new FBI director, and all the two guys that have taken over and they promised to seek the truth have not proven to do so, and they're doing a giant cover up on the Epstein so-called suicide, and typical federal government jurisdictional cover-up that's going on. And so those are the sorts of things that I got into that intrigued me years ago, of course, with the Kennedy assassination, as you mentioned. We didn't have very much to go on back in the 60s except what the mainstream media were feeding us with Oswald and the impossibility of him doing what they claimed he did from the rear in the school book depository building. And of course that never happened. And Kennedy, of course, was shot from the front, and we know that now, and he was shot more than once, and it was a giant CIA FBI operation. I have since in recent years written a book on the two Oswalds, because indeed there was a Lee and there was a Harvey, and I became suspect of this way, way back in 1966 when there was a man who's a professor at San Diego State University wrote a book called The Second Oswald, and that intrigued me in reading that then, because I had been suspicious of the Warren Commission's cover-up in 64. I call it the Warren Omission, but the book that he wrote had some... He was no more of an investigative reporter in 1966 than I was. But he had some great questions. I mean, he was a smart dude. He was a professor in university, but he had some great questions. And one of the ones that stuck with me then and has ever since was, how could a 17-year-old kid drop out of high school senior year in New Orleans? New Orleans was one of the most distinguishable accents in America. And he drops out of school and joins the Marines and allegedly goes to language school for 6 weeks and learns Russian. And when he does go to Russia on the backs of the CIA in 1960, he meets his future wife, Marina, and he speaks the language so well she thinks he's a native. There's something stinking about that.
Yeah, I would agree with you 100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, my book is on the two Oswalds that took over after the great research that John Armstrong did, and I'm sure you're familiar with his 1,000-page book that pointed out, Harvey and Lee was the name of it, and I gave John Armstrong credit in my book. Mine is the Reader's Digest version, but it's a lot easier, I think, to keep up with him than it is the big epistle that he wrote and all the facts and figures. But it points out how, indeed, there was a Lee. Lee Arzawa was born in New Orleans in 1939, October the 18th, and his brother indeed was he had a half brother, and of course an older brother later wrote a book about the Kennedy assassination, and how he was running around with Lee in Dallas in the summer of 1963, and that's documented in the older Oswald's book. And yet we know that Harvey, the second Oswald, was actually in New Orleans in the summer of 63, along with his pregnant wife, Marina. So it was impossible for him to be in two places at once. And once again, the main thing that triggered me was the language barrier and the fact that one Oswald spoke language spoke the Russian language so fluently, and the other one, not at all, is the one who, of course, dropped out of school and went to Japan in the Marines. But that's all in my book that you may have a copy of. And the one that you praised the other day, that everything that they ever told me was a lie, is facts on the Bobby Kennedy rub-out. It was impossible for Sirhan to have killed Bobby Kennedy because he was never behind him. He was always in front of him. And all witnesses said he was never closer than 4 feet to Bobby Kennedy, when indeed he was firing that 8-shot Ivory Johnson weapon. I knew the gun well because I had it. I had the same weapon myself. And as a traveling entertainer, you know, it's a good idea to have a pistol in the car with you when you're being paid off in cash often on Saturday night. So that's why I bought that little pistol. But when it was indeed was the same model as Sirhan was carrying and firing and wounding other people in the room, and it turned out that there were 13 shots fired from Sirhan's 8-shot revolver, and that was the bullet holes all through the room. So anyway, once again, it was impossible for Sirhan to have been the culprit, and it was obviously another government rub out. It was another CIA, FBI funded operation, and not much different from the Kennedy assassination and the gunman behind the fence in 63, and with Martin Luther King, and a month before Kennedy, and 2 months before Kennedy. Martin was April the 4th of 68, and Bobby was June the 5th of 68, and the head of the FBI hated Martin Luther King and said so publicly and did everything he could to embarrass him. And an interesting anecdote about that situation is that King, back in about 64, was complaining that to the press that J. Edgar Hoover didn't have enough FBI agents in the South. In fact, there was not even an office, an agency in Jackson, Mississippi for the FBI. Not to mention the several spots in Alabama and Georgia and Louisiana. And he was complaining about that, and he demanded an audience with Hoover and Lyndon Johnson in the White House. King did, and they met there. And I happened to have a friend who was my age, was a young FBI agent in Washington, and I didn't necessarily make friends with FBI agents, but this one was a natural because his wife was in my wedding, was my wife's best friend. So that's how we became acquainted. And so he told me the interesting anecdote that when King went to the White House, all the newsmen were out there waiting for him. And he said, yeah, he was going to ask Hoover these questions and blah, blah, blah. When he emerged about 15 minutes later, they said, well, how did it go, Dr. King? How did it go? Did you talk with Mr. Hoover? And after cursing Hoover for the past several years and months, he told the news, King told the newsman then that Mr. Hoover is a mighty fine man. Yeah, that came from, once again, from my acquaintance who was the FBI agent who was stationed there in D.C. and heard saw and heard all this action himself. But I just thought that was an interesting little anecdote. It was never publicized very much. And those are the things that Pat Shannon went after as an investigative reporter, the stuff that was covered up in so many of these cases. And so that's what I did, and that's what I made my investigations about and what my books are about. And that those sorts of details can be learned at my website, where the books are advertised, as well as many, many stories, a couple thousand of various stories over the years. The website is from Independent News International, and that's not the name of it. The name of it is INI, the abbreviations of Independent News International. So to look it up, one must hit INI-world-report.org. And you can learn a lot more about my history and what I've done and what I'm about.
Go ahead and give that website one more time, just so everybody's got a chance to write it down. Yep.
Yeah, the initials INI, then a dash, the name world, a dash, the word report.org. INI-world-report.org.
Perfect. Sounds good. Yeah, there is a wealth of information there at the website. I don't know, Will, have you had a chance to check that website out?
I did. I spent some time on it, and it's a wealth of information, well-researched, well-documented. I would challenge people, if you're going to other news aggregate sites, that sort of thing, you might want to get some real news and visit there and kind of, I don't know if you would call it the news behind the news, but it's a wealth of information. Highly recommended.
I think it's just there's a lot of true news there. There's stuff that you can read about that, exposing government cover-ups from one thing to another. I mean, it just continues to go on. And you can tell that going to this website that there's just a lifetime of information there. And I've really, really enjoyed it as well. I've known Pat for a long time. Really thankful that we get a chance to interview him. Hey, Pat, what do you think about the recent release of the JFK files? Is that still just playing into their cover up, or what's your thoughts on that?
Well, you mean lack of release, don't you?
Well, yeah, pretty much.
I had an acquaintance who's similar in occupation as I, and he, back in about 21, it was after the fake election when they dumped Trump, and he did an interview with Trump at the time and asked him point blank. He said, "Hey, President Trump, you know, back in 17, you said you were going to release all these files from the JFK assassination cover-up. How come you never did?"
Yeah, exactly.
He later wrote and said that Trump replied, "If you had known and seen what I saw, you would not have released them either." Which tells me that Trump knew there was too much of an expose of the government people that were in on it, that it was just going to be too shocking to the American people to learn what had been going on all those years.
Exactly. Yep. Good. Absolutely good point. Well, we are coming up on a break. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Stay tuned. Stay on the line, men. We'll be back in just a few minutes. And we're back, and you're listening to the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network, and we've got our very special guest on with us today that we are very thankful to have, Pat Shannon. Pat, are you there?
Yeah, I didn't realize you played the piano so well.
I wish you were here to play it on the guitar for us.
I was enthralled back in those years. I mentioned my entertainment years. There was a guy named Tom Lara who did satire, and he inspired me to learn how to play the piano. I learned by transforming chords from my guitar to the piano and learned that and how to pound on it. And I actually, during my years in the nightclub, during breaks, would entertain the audience with some of Tom Lara's foolishness, and I had a big time doing that. So I'm really not a pianist, but I did do well enough to back up myself and singing a few silly songs.
Do you still do any playing at all?
No, not even at home anymore. I just lost my motivation, I guess, when I lost an audience.
Gotcha. Well, Will, I'll turn it over to you. What do you got some questions for Mr. Shannon?
Yeah, I have about 6 or 7 hours worth of questions, so I'm going to just try to pick some of the highlights here. Pat, this is Will, and I think probably my most favorite book that I have of yours is Everything They Ever Told Me was a Lie. And I've passed that book around to several folks, and so my question, I guess, is in the world today, a few years after you've written this book, what do you think the biggest lie we're being told right now, Pat?
Oh, well, once again, I researched little incidental lies that was carried on by the government on these various cases, and as you noted from my book, is a lot of the little things that that I wrote about more than the great ones. But to answer your question, it certainly would have to be the current cover up FBI is doing about the so called suicide in the jailhouse back in 2019, and
yes, sir, this is with Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, with the whole Epstein case, and I do remember from the time it happened, the report that was suppressed. You may remember too that about like 4:30 or 5, I'm trying to guess now at the time because it's been 20 years since I read this, but it was about the morning that Epstein had allegedly committed suicide. About 4:30 in the morning, there was a black unmarked SUV. I don't think I remember that being government marked. It might have been, but a body was hauled out and put in there and taken away. Now, whether that was a dead body or a live body, we don't know. But at the time, we, of course, had to suspect that it was a live one, and this unmarked SUV took it away. Then, like 6 or 6:30 in the morning, the report comes to the media that Epstein had committed suicide. Once again, just a smelly piece of cover-up. And to answer your question, I think that's the current big thing going on right now.
I'm going to follow up just before we get off the Jeffrey Epstein thing. You know, today, you know, I guess it came out yesterday, you know, they're saying, you know, there was a list. I think Pam Bondi, the AG, the attorney general, told us a month ago that there's, you know, 10,000 victims and all of this sort of stuff. And the tune today is there is no list. There never was a list. And even though we said there's no video, there is video, but it doesn't show anything. Here's, I guess, my follow up to you. And I get pure opinion, whatever way you want to answer it, Pat. Who was Jeffrey Epstein? Who was he working for? What are your thoughts on that? Was he Mossad? Was he what was he, Pat? What is he? I'm not sure he was or was, right? I'm not sure if he's dead or not.
Well, that's right. I think he had a pretty good thing going, a money making thing going. We got pictures of Trump with him going to the island. Bill Clinton dressed up in those funny pajamas. You've probably seen that picture. And he was on several trips down there. So many people would be implicated. It's the reason that the cover up had to continue, and the records are not going to come out, whatever Pam Bondi says, because there's too much heat. And I know the kind of heat that those rascals can put on someone. I experienced it myself with the Oklahoma City investigation in the late 90s, because the situation being some of the people that we put on our film, one was a state representative, and Hoppy Heidelberg, you may remember, was a grand jury member.
Grand juror, and, yes, sir.
Yeah, well, and he and I became close friends, so close that when I would go back to Oklahoma City, which was 6 times of summer 95, he even invited me to stay with him at his guest room. He said, you know, there's two of these investigative reporters that I trust, Pat, and he said, you're one of them, and Craig Roberts was the other, and he... Mm-hmm. Hoppy was a very savvy individual, and of course he got kicked off the grand jury because he tried to do his job. And the state representative, drawing a blank, became active in the investigation of the FBI cover-up and everything that went on. He and Hoppy, they both came renowned in the Patriot circuit. And they were driving from Oklahoma City to Dallas one time, and oh, year or two, maybe after 95 and the incident. But they were driving, and Hoppy asked him, he said, this last video you did, you said something about this busted sting operation, which has been nothing but a government cover-up from the beginning. And what are you doing? You know better than that. You know that the bombs are inside the building. You saw Ben Parton's report. You know the bombs are inside the building, and there wasn't any busted sting operation. It was something that they pulled off, and he just was wondering, you know, why are you doing that? And he said he responded, he reported to Poppy that as they're driving down the interstate towards Dallas, he said that the FBI told me that if I didn't back off, I'd start seeing my kids' pictures on the milk cartons.
Oh, wow.
That's your federal government talking to a witness. That's the way they intimidate. And, of course, you love your kids more than you do yourself, and you're not going to do anything to endanger them. And this is the sort of stuff that they pull.
I'm glad you brought up Oklahoma City and the bombing there, the Murrow Building, because that's actually where I first heard your name in reading some of the stuff you covered. And you were trying to think of Charles Key, Pat. That was the state representative that was so outspoken during that. I'm not sure what became of him, but he certainly he acted as a statesman during all of that, not just a politician. He truly spoke out and acted like a patriot. And I know you did a great job of covering that, but I wanted to say thank you on something else, because what kind of part of my journey of really opening my eyes and becoming awake was your writings on Terrence Yakey, the sergeant there that I guess you would say was a secondary death related to the Oklahoma City bombing, and what you wrote about that, and I appreciate that. That's a name I think that has been lost in history, that people don't realize the hero that man was that day, and then what our own federal government ended up doing to him.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they murdered him. I visited the scene where his body was found out in his car was first found parked by the side of the road out in the country of the next county over from Oklahoma City. And the report of people that saw it said it looked like a hog had been butchered in the car. But his body was found more than a mile away across a pasture where he had to climb over a couple of fences, and there was his blood on some of the fences. And he was found face down in the field, and the cops came and went all the way there. They were actually 40 police from the local county as well as Oklahoma City Police Department, because he was actually the first cop on the scene at Murrah after the explosion.
If I remember right, I think he was the first one there and the first one to run in and start pulling people out.
Correct.
Exactly, and he was supposed to get a Medal of Honor for it, and then shot at a downward angle, covered in cuts and bruises, and it was ruled a suicide?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, not only with 40 cops out there trying to cover the terrain, there's no weapon is found, and they spent like an hour out there when suddenly the names are escaping me again. The head man from the feds who we used to see standing in front of the microphone and telling all the lies every day to the report. And
was
the chief
Louis
of police.
Free?
No, he was one okay. from the. Free was the one that told the lie about the elevator, wasn't it? That he rode down on the elevator, fell in the building?
So.
I think
yeah.
so. But that was another lie, because we proved with our investigation that. The modern elevators don't fall anyway. They are
right.
so equipped that they can stop themselves before it goes all the way to the bottom. I think after a half a floor, it'll catch itself. But anyway, my point is that here comes the chief fed and the chief of police of Oklahoma City land there on the grounds in a helicopter. And this is an hour or so after 40 cops have been looking and scouring the area that, it took them 5 minutes before they found the gun. They found the pistol there, right? Oh, amazing. Ain't that great?
That's kind of like finding a passport for one of those terrorists, right? And all that rubble in New York City.
Yeah. But it was just another example of the stuff that they will stoop to. And you reminded me in my book of talking about Sirhan and Bobby Kennedy, and I mentioned that Ivor Johnson. Let me remind your audience that the Ivor Johnson 22 pistol that Sirhan carried and he took away from him was captured by the police. And when he got to trial, there was an investigator, a LAPD criminologist. His name was Dwayne Wolfer. And he testified under oath that he had personally test fired the weapon, the Ivor Johnson 22 revolver, with the serial number, get this, H as in hotel, 18602. Now, that's the incoming I'm going to ignore on the telephone. But it had been, he had found the weapon that had fired the bullets and had been removed from Kennedy's neck, and he found that they matched those bullets removed. However, and here's my big however on page 222, the serial number on a Sirhan's Ivor Johnson weapon was H Hotel 53725 and not 18602. He had tested the gun that killed Kennedy, all right, but it wasn't Sirhan's. That's the sort of crap that we have.
Well, I guess my follow-up on the question of the biggest lie that they're telling us now, Pat, and this may be I don't know if it's a mountain too high to climb for you or not, but in the 5 decades plus you've been doing this, what do you think the biggest lie they've ever told us is?
Well, I think that probably would be JFK because it involves so many people and so many agencies. Certainly, it has to be one of the biggest. And once again, the lies that intrigued me about all these cases were the little ones, like the one I just indicated to you.
Yeah.
Here's another one. You remember Chuck Colson?
Yeah, yeah. He was one of the Watergate guys.
That's right. And he was actually known by his colleagues as Nixon's hitman. And
right.
And I remember this well because I saw I believe it was part of the report. Yeah, I'm sure it was that, you know, Nixon had all those recordings destroyed. Well, Colson, 4 days prior to Arthur Bremer shooting, along with someone else, by the way, George Wallace, Chuck Colson is talking to none other than Arthur Bremer on the phone.
Oh, wow.
What? Yeah. And I just did some research yesterday because I knew I was going to be talking about some things like that with you guys today. And I pulled up an heiress, Cornelia Wallace. They've destroyed the records. It's not, you can't even find it on the internet anymore, except Cornelia Wallace made to the Birmingham newspaper where she said, and was quoted, and it's still in print. You can still find it there, but it's the only mention of it. When she's saying, "What was Chuck Colson doing talking to Arthur Bremer 4 days before he shot my husband?"
That's a good question.
Yeah, but that's what's left. They destroyed the conversation, and that's what, you know, Nixon had done. But once again, it was too big. They had to get rid of it.
It's amazing to me to try to wrap my brain, Pat, around the complex spider web of everyone that has to be complicit in these little compartments to be able to successfully tell these lies to the American people. I mean, it's print media, broadcast media, digital media, different fashions of of the government. It's just mind-boggling, isn't it? That that you can get all of these folks that are individual to be complicit in these lies by telling these little small lies to cover up the big lies. Am I misrepresenting that, Pat, or is that how it works?
Well, absolutely. And the positions, the high positions that these people have. I'm here in Dallas. You got the in the Texas School Book Depository. You got the Dallas police captain holding up this German Mauser and saying, "Here's the rifle we found."
Right.
And of course, and And the police chief also confirmed that. And the next thing we know that, it's a Mannlicher or whatever you call it that Oswald had. He didn't have a German Mauser. And here, that's the gun that's showing where they found in the school book depository. But once again, these are people, police captains, police chiefs, FBI heads, CIA. Their positions they hold is just mind-blowing on how they can lie to the American people.
And I don't know if this is a question. I apologize if y'all just heard a thunder. That was a very close lightning strike there. I don't know if this is a question that can be answered 100%, but looking at the span of control that someone or something must possess, like you said, of FBI heads and police chiefs and coroners and media moguls and all, who in the world is behind this, Pat? Is it one group of people? Is it one person? I mean, is that a fair question to even ask?
Yes, but it's impossible that it's one person. It's a deep state group that are very, very powerful, and they use the kind of intimidation that I mentioned that Charles Key got and on people. And the witnesses that know something are just terrified into telling the truth.
And is this a international conspiracy as far as the deep state? Because I know it's not just an American phenomenon or American problem. You know, this is the same stuff that is it's all over the world, right? I mean, you were talking earlier about your international travels through Europe and even Australia. We experience the same stuff in these other countries. We always talk about we hear about the Bavarian Illuminati and we hear about the Masonic control of the world. Is it one group, or is that just more are they just trying to get us to watch the walnut shells and not pay attention to the pea? Who is it, Pat?
Well, certainly, you mentioned the Masonic conspiracy and the control, and that probably is the biggest faction. And the fact that most of the members in Masonry are ignorant. They get Christians to join Masonry because they do so many good things with their hospitals and this sort of stuff that they find it to be a very benevolent organization. And I learned in recent years that something like 2-point-some-odd% of the money that the Masonic organization takes in actually goes to the Shrine Hospitals. Oh, it's incidental. But the way they fool Christian people into joining, and one is that they love to talk about God. They can talk about God in the Masonry meetings. But any Masons listening right now that think that I'm full of baloney, that you've been deceived, I defy you, mister. The next time you're at a Masonic meeting, ask them that you want to pray to Jesus Christ and see what they tell you.
That's not going to go over too well, will it, Pat?
Say that again.
I said that won't go over very well, will it, Pat?
No, of course not. But that's the God, the only God that is not allowed to be mentioned because their God is Satan.
Yeah. Jason, I'm gonna keep going unless you guys.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying it. I want to just keep going. We've got about 10 minutes left. Let's just keep rolling.
Well, here's another question that I'm asking these big questions, Pat. I apologize, but I'm trying to maximize and do the best with our time that we have. In your illustrious career of investigative journalism, going back to '83, like you were talking about with Gordon Call. And even before that, with JFK and RFK and MLK to where we are present, talking about Epstein, what are you most proud of that you have covered, that you have written about, that you have shared with the world? Is there something that stands out above the others that you can just sort of hang your hat on and say, you know, if there's one thing that Pat Shannon's remembered for, I want it to be this?
No, I really can't, because once again, I have prided myself in digging into some of the unreported facts of these cases And I guess that's the one that I would say, hey, that's the one I want people to know. This is and that's not any one particular case, but it's the one type of investigation that I have done over the years. And there's so many little bitty things like this that I have uncovered and reported about that is just not known. And of course, the mainstream media is not going to touch it anyway, even if I tell them. And this is why people such as I get the term of, oh, well, he's just another conspiracy theorist. Well, that was a very clever term that the CIA came up with in the late 60s when too many people were getting too close to the truth mm-hmm. about the Kennedy assassination. And that's when they invented the term, and we used to laugh at it. And but now it's so easy for the new generation, they see it so much on the Internet, to label someone such as I as a conspiracy theorist. But I got a letter, in fact, it's there on the website. Somebody wrote in commentary. It's kind of one of the best compliments I ever got. He said Pat Shannon is not a conspiracy theorist. Pat Shannon is a conspiracy scientist.
Oh, wow. Thank you very much. There you go. I like it.
I like that a lot. That's good. Well, you've done is basically you've went in there and you've verified the facts, and you've brought a lot of the facts, stuff that has been hidden from people, stuff that they've continued to try to cover up, that they've lied to us about, that they basically didn't want us to know. And you've brought those things to light and told the truth about them. So I think that's why we're having this today. The book, Everything They Told Me Was a Lie, fantastic book. And we offer that book. I've given that book to I don't know how many people, and they've read it cover to cover and then started reading it again and just talked about how that is just an action-packed book full of short stories, compiled Reader's Digest versions of stuff that they've lied to us about for 100 years.
Yeah, well,
I've used it as a gateway book to people as far as trying to get folks to wake up of you know, hey, read this book and do your own research, try to prove the man wrong, and I think it's an incredible resource for that.
Well, thank you. You know, one of my favorite pieces in the book, it was a long one, but I appreciated getting some calls from some people who were very much up on the subject of the moon landing and had no reason whatsoever to doubt the government story and NASA's big fable until they read my chapter on the moonwalking hoax. And And I was impressed because, once again, these people were no dummies, and they had very much believed that the story of the moonwalk was true until they read my chapter. And I thought that was a very great compliment. I appreciated them saying that to me because I made a believer out of them.
And Pat, I know a couple people. I know at least three people that when they read that in your book, they made up their mind that they were going to prove you wrong. And they went out there and they started researching it, reading these other books, looking at the videos and different stuff. And they came back and they're like, he's right. He's right. And it just blew them away that was a hoax. And they came back, and I've had people that, you know, came back and talked about the, you know, the flat earth and different things, and just a lot of the different subjects that you cover. And it's kind of interesting because there's something in that book will trip somebody's trigger, and they're going to make up their mind. They're going to go out and do some research on it and prove you wrong. And they come back and it's like, he was right about that.
mm-hmm.
Well, as a pure. Go ahead, Pat.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you got some good reports on it as well as I did, because I didn't get that many. But, it's great to hear. You know, as my dad told me years and years ago, never interrupt anybody when he's complimenting you.
Ah, there you go. Well, I was going to speak to that particular section of the book real quick because it's just a little anecdotal story, but that will forever stand out in my mind, the section of the book concerning the moon landing. I was on the phone with a friend of mine discussing that part of the book. I had given him my copy of the book to read, and we were talking about the Van Allen radiation belt and how it would be impossible for reentry. And while we were talking about that, he stopped and said, President Trump was just shot in Pennsylvania. So we were discussing your book during the assassination attempt, which led to a whole different topic of JFK and all that. So forever that will be burned in my mind, Pat, of that section of your book because of that world event that happened that day.
Well, I can tell you the date, July 13th, 2024.
That's it, sir. 2024, yes, sir. So that was something. That was something indeed.
Well, Pat, I want to thank you for taking your time and coming on there, and a fantastic interview. I really appreciate it. Will, thank you for being here. And hey, folks, thanks for tuning in. You can order the book, Everything That They Told Me Was a Lie. You can go to our website, www.scriptoresforamerica.org. You can go to the store there. It's on there. And Pat, closing thoughts.
Say again.
You got any closing thoughts?
Oh, no, there are certain things that are going on, but you've covered it. Anybody that gets that book, Everything They Ever Told Me Was a Lie, is going to read more closing thoughts than I could possibly think of today. Because, I have to agree with you. It's loaded.
It is. It is. Well, and again, I want to thank you for being here. Thanks for taking the time, and I hope we can get you back on here, get you back on the radio, and talk about a couple of these, maybe some of these topics. Maybe next time we can go into some in-depth topics on maybe Oklahoma City or some different things, the Mendina incident with Gordon Call. I'd love to sit down and just, you know, spend some time and get you to talk about that and tell our audience about that. If we could do that sometime, that'd be great.
Yeah, do you have my video on Oklahoma City?
I do not.
Okay, well, it was filmed in August and September of 95, so very early in the game, and much as it happened. But yes, we can talk about that. But meanwhile, I'll get you a copy of it. You can see it before you have me back on again.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. And thank you, folks, for being here.
And fears. They move us through illusion and confusion of the mind, and by changing subtle meanings to the words between the lines. It's the news behind the news and the methods you can use. It's a blueprint and the plan they all rely on. And it's written in the protocols, learned elders of Zion. They'll tell you it's a forgery, they'll tell you it's a fake, that some anti-Semite wrote it for the money that he'd make. It's been slanderized and demonized and labeled racist hate by the same who stake a claim to its creation. Now I'm not here to try to argue if it's false or if it's true, if the author was a commie or the likes of you know who. What I'm really trying to tell you and to get across to you is it's a blueprint to the downfall of our nation. To the chaos that's occurring in the land, there's a road to communism, there's a global master plan. You'll never read about it in a book of history, cause it's been hidden from the masses to control their destiny. It's the news behind the news and the methods that they use. It's the blueprint and the plan they all rely on. And it's written in the protocols, a
learned elders of Zion. It's the global master plan. You'll never read about it in a book of history, 'cause it's been hidden from the masses to control our destiny. It's the news behind the news and the methods that they use. It's a blueprint and the plan they all rely on. And it's written in the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. And it's written in the protocols of the learned elders of Zion.
Scriptures for America has a number of resources available for use by His people. It is being taught from the pulpits today that America is nothing special and isn't in the Bible, but that's just not true. The pamphlet, The Greatest Discovery of Our Age, clearly shows where America can be found in the Word of God. The Greatest Discovery of Our Age also reveals the true identity of God's people and tells who really are the children of the devil. To order The Greatest Discovery of Our Age, please send $6 to Scriptures for America, Post Office Box 766, La Porte, Colorado 80535. Or go online to scripturesforamerica.org. Or call the Radio Ranch at area code 307-742-7582. Email preacher at sfaw.org. Order your copy today of The Greatest Discovery of Our Age.